Our speaker this month is Myers-Raymer, and I'll stop there. Bye, Myers. Oh, he won't even let me introduce him.
I'm gonna save her. Howdy, y'all. My name is Myers-Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. Is that too loud, or is that okay? Okay. Mics just freak me out. It just like. Well, now, it's been I don't know about you guys, but it's been a crazy AA week. I've had some of the most bizarre emails that I've ever gotten in my whole life this week. Crazy stuff. Just, guys, everything from those cats that are trying to rewrite the steps so Guy's not in there. And there's lots of hubbub about that now, and they're trying to go through this thing, and it's just like, oh, man. Two emails from last week, people just ripping me up, and the cowards don't ever sign it. I don't understand it. Listen, I'm going to tell you just as a little caveat right here. If you want to say something ugly, if you don't like what I have to say, then write it, but sign it, you coward. I mean, it just drives me insane. Now I feel better. I don't know about you guys. I know. It's a weird place to start this because we talked about this inventory a good bit last week, and it's just the coolest thing. One thing I was thinking about during the week is that in my experience in AA land, we see people relapsing all the time and people not staying sober all the time, not because they did four steps wrong, it's because they didn't do them at all. It's the craziest thing in the whole wide world. I mean, my problem is that I see so many people that just, because for whatever reason, they just hold it at a distance until they get sick. We think that at the end of this third step that we have this long period of grace and it'll go on forever and ever and ever. It'll go on for a year or two if we want it to. And that's not been my experience. It may be some of your experience, but most of the time, within 2 or 3 weeks after doing a third step, if you're not in the middle of an inventory, you're going to start getting kind of goofy. You're going to start feeling distance. You're going to have, your head's going to start selling you a bunch of crazy ideas. Well, maybe I'm really not a drunk. Well, maybe I don't need to do what they do. Maybe sober bowling's all I need. And these are the ideas that our head starts selling us. And the problem is that left unchecked, most of us will buy them. I don't care how goofy the idea is. Most of us will start buying into that stuff. And that's the reason why there's this kind of continued momentum. Starting tonight, let's do something a little different. If you go down to the bottom, this is the weirdest place anybody ever started a step deal. Go down to the bottom of page 70. There's a line there that starts, in this book you read again and again, that's where we are. That's where we'll start out like that, see if we can't get some stuff going here. In this book you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. Now, just hold your finger right there on that little piece there like this. Don't you think it's interesting that Bill wrote that stuff this way? Because once again, we find ourselves in this situation where they're telling us that something else was more important than what the booze was. I mean, look, if they'd asked me to write it, wouldn't you have written it like me? We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever the booze was doing to you, or the dope was doing to you, or whatever else. They bring us back to this idea that self-will is playing a major role in what happens to us, and it does. The thing about it is that it's such a weird deal. Everything in my head says booze does it. Booze is the problem. Everything down to my core, I cannot get my arms around the idea that self played any part in this at all.
Well, maybe sometimes I'm selfish. If you started it.
I don't you guys do that too? I mean, it's just the craziest thing. Well, and so they're telling us again that that's not the case. If you've already made a decision, that's one. And an inventory of your grosser handicaps, that's two. You've made a good beginning. It could not be simpler, guys. They were not seeking perfection. They were seeking what they just said. That being so, you've swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. No kidding. This is good. Flip over to 75, and we'll start right there. I want to talk for 2 seconds, and then we'll get back into the text deal itself. over the last couple of years, in working with cats that have relapsed, and it seems like I'm in a little period here where I'm getting lots and lots of guys that are coming from other places that have relapsed. And in the process of doing this, the very first question I ask every one of them to a man is, tell me about your experience in sponsorship. He said, oh, you mean my sponsor? I said, no, your experience sponsoring. Tell me what it's about. And all of these guys will say exactly the same thing. Well, I didn't really sponsor. Oh, I see. And then we want to know why, and then it gets kind of ugly from there. Because guys, we'll talk this next week. We're going to talk most of the night about this one thing. But the weird part about this stuff is, guys, is that if there's a secret handshake in AA, it has to be sponsorship. It has to be our ability to sit and listen to another guy share his fifth step and to talk about this. And it's the thing that to a man and a woman, everyone in here gets goofy about that idea of listening to somebody's inventory. And they gave us a great little rundown here in the last two or three pages. They've given us a great rundown of what it looks like to listen to somebody's inventory and what we're supposed to be doing. I don't have to be a clinical psychologist. I don't even have to be smart. I wouldn't be able to listen to them if I had to be smart. I don't have to be quick. I don't have to be any. All I have to do is be plugged in. God, this is what we need to do here. And rock on. It's the swift. Is there anybody in here that didn't do inventory with guys that haven't heard a fifth step, that walked out and you felt like you've been bitch slapped? I'm telling you, it's the weirdest thing like this. I'll walk out after doing a good fifth step, and I'll walk out and go, man, what just happened to me in there? And you're the whole way home, you're thinking, how did I get so smart? Where did all that cool stuff come from? All that wisdom I get? It had nothing to do with you, Slick. And the quicker you figure that out, the more you're going to be engaged in trying to do it again as quick as you can. You don't have to be good. All you got to do is be willing. Willing. Flip over to page 75 and let's look at this thing. Dr. Bob, when he was asked about this part of his inventory, he said that this was the part that separated the men from the boys. This was the part that got to be sort of magic. And trying to intellectually connect these dots up through this part that we're getting ready to talk about sometimes is difficult to do because some of it just simply doesn't make sense. I'd like a clear path intellectually that I can connect all up and I can say, okay, this happens and then this happens and this happens. Oh, I see, then that happens. And the reality here is that this thing gets sort of supernatural. And I know some of you go, oh, no, not this. But you can't deny it. How does a busted up drunk get free of booze simply by doing work that they've asked us to do? It's pretty magic stuff. And so what they did, it says, we're in the middle of page 75. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Now, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. Somebody finally knows about the goats. It's a relief. Honest. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we have begun to have a spiritual experience. I can tell you about this till you're blue in the face. We can talk about it, but until you experience it yourself, you'll never be able to really get a sense of what this is all about until you do it yourself. It's like somebody telling you about sex, and it sounds pretty cool. And I don't care how visual they are. I don't care how well they explained it. I don't care if you have visual aids. I don't care. I'm just telling you right now, until you had sex, you have no clue. And this is exactly the same kind of situation. Until you're in a situation where the experience is your own, faith is built out of experience. Once we experience it, then all of a sudden the faith is there, and I go, oh yeah, I can do this. What they're saying is true. Otherwise, I just have to believe you. And in the beginning, the belief is okay. Just believing that you said it was going to be all right is good enough. But at some point in time in there, guys, you just got to get in there and do it yourself. Listen, the reason I mention this, guys, is because I've been covered up lately with conversations with men who are trying to have an experience based on somebody else's experience. You run across this someday, you know what I'm talking about? It's the weirdest feeling in the world. It's like they say, well, this is how we do this. And I'm going, oh, no kidding. Well, is that what happened to you when you did it? Well, no, I didn't really do it like this. Golly, guys, come on. You have to experience this stuff. And once you begin to experience it, then you'll. This is the reason why I have a real problem sometimes with discussion type meetings where you'll sit and you'll discuss and then you begin to pick pieces of stuff. Why do I know this? It's because this is what I did for 7 years. You begin to pick pieces of other people's experiences and make them your experience, and you've never done it yourself. And that's how things get some kind of wheels off kind of thing like that, because you don't really know. Some of you may not agree with that, but the experience is the coolest thing in the world in this stuff, and it will make all the difference in how you relate to other men in this deal and women in this deal. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Classic poetic Bill Wilson. I love the way that guy writes. Returning home. I'm going to mention something real quick. You guys ever look at the orange pages on the internet? Somebody got a crawlful of AA at one point in time and started writing a bunch of dirty stuff and starting a bunch of rumors. And one of the rumors that they propagated on this website was that Bill Wilson was actually a moron. He couldn't write, he couldn't think for himself, and that all of this stuff was ghostwritten by somebody else. And it's really weird. And so of course, we know that's not true because we've read the original manuscripts and we know all this other kind of stuff. But more importantly, I've got a collection of letters at the shop that a guy brought me one time between Bill and Ed Dowling, Father Ed. And, buddy, they're the most poetic. It's like reading C.S. Lewis. If they're morons, then we got real problems. I mean, I'm telling you, these guys are intellectual giants batting this stuff back and forth, and it's the coolest thing in the world to read. Trust me, he knew what he was talking about when he wrote this stuff. The great directions after we do this inventory stuff, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. I'm diligent about the hour, okay? I'm a nut job about the hour. And guys call me like this, and I'm going, hey, wait a minute, when did you start your deal? Oh, I don't know, 10 minutes ago? Well, I said when you were done, you were supposed to call me. Yeah, I know, I'm done. Where was the part about the hour? Oh, I didn't think you meant that seriously. I said, yeah. I explained why I meant it seriously. So let's talk about this just for a second. The book says, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Now, if I think that 40 minutes is fine, what am I doing? Already, I haven't even been on my own working in this work, what, an hour or so since He left me? And He's already making decisions based on self. I'm busy, I don't need to do that, I'm whatever, fill in the blank, it doesn't make any difference. But this is where arrogance starts sliding in. And where do you check it? Where does it end? That's the beginning of it right there. Come on, follow a direction. Just do, that's the reason why I get so weird when I see these men balled up like twine at the end of a goofy AA run, and they're a mess. They're suicidal. They can't get anything straight. They're just coming apart at the seams. They're one walking train wreck. And then we wonder what it is. Well, how much of the program did you customize to fit whatever your little they said you could do? You see what I'm saying? They gave us specific directions, and they used words like that, specifically, exactly. They were talking about this thing literally. They wanted us to do exactly what they said do, and then we would get exactly the results they got. And that's, you can customize it any way you want to, Slick. I don't care. You can go, I don't care. You can sacrifice a cat out behind the building. I don't care. But don't expect the results that this book gave. Don't expect it. It ain't going to happen, guys. Trust me. And cleaning up the cat, it's a mess. You don't want to do it. I'll change that next time to dog, okay? I know the cat. Okay, the cat girls are already pulling the laptops out, writing me at work. You guys get this. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. I got to tell you, when I first did this, after I did my inventory with Cliff, I asked Cliff, I said, Cliff, let me ask you something. I think I probably already know the answer, but are the steps actually written in here someplace? I've been 7 years here, not here, but 7 years in AA, and I didn't know that they were written in one place in the book. Some of us are stupider than the others. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we've asked you if we've omitted anything. We're building an ark through which we will walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? These are questions that they're asking. Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? These are questions. This isn't Bill just trying to write rhetorical statements. They're questions, and they demand answers. Have we done these things? It's often at this place that we find out we get headlong into this idea of whether or not we're omitting things or we're forgetting things. Listen, we all forget things. I've been listening to Fifth Steps about 6 months, and this guy called me one night and he said, and this is the first thing that he said on the other end of the telephone. I said, "Call me if you've forgotten something or if some." And so when I picked up the phone, it's about 11 o'clock at night, and he said, "Hey, this is so and so. There was this body. That's how the sentence started." And I went, "Crap. How do you forget something like that? I mean, how do you do that?" And there was this body. They'd buried this body. I'll tell you the story later. He told me I could tell the story if I wanted to, but it was just the craziest thing. Golly, we make some weird decisions. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Let me ask you something. If you grew up like I did in AA, and you came into a room where they had lampshades on the wall that had the steps up the deal like this, if they were in there in the first meeting I was at, and I remember looking at the list going, "Won't do that, won't do that, won't do that." Well, hey, six, I could do that. I took six and seven just like that, sitting in a meeting, and I hadn't been there 3 days. Didn't know anything about the rest of it. Didn't know people say, what step work have you done? Oh, I've already done a couple of them. See, because I'm just reading it off the wall. I don't know what it means. I'm just reading it. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Listen how this is written. This is the coolest. I can never in a million years I could not have thought about how to do this way. Can he now take them all, every one, ? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. That's two times in that paragraph that they're talking about willingness here. It's being key on this thing. But they're giving us the out, and then they're giving us the way to drag it all back in. If we want to, we can do that. Because, guys, how many of you guys have ever gotten to this particular point, but there was still something you wanted to hang on to? I still got a girlfriend. I still like porn. You see what I'm saying? The idea that we have to be spiritual giants before we do the rest of this stuff, Bill understands that there may be stuff here that we're not ready to deal with. We're spiritually not ready to deal with it yet, and it may take some doing. The reason I'm mentioning this thing, guys, is because this is where some confusion and conflict sets itself up within ourselves. And it makes the experience less than it should be, because we're goofy around this stuff. Is it going, "Well, how can I do this if I'm still doing this?" Well, he just said that's what it's explaining. A lot of guys do that. A lot of guys will get to this part, and we still have something there that we're not really ready to get rid of. We've admitted it's objectionable. Listen, you know one that I wanted to hang on to for a long time? It was self-righteous anger. Listen, as a falling down drunk, I'm really good at just losing it. I'll rip you a new one drunk. But when I sobered up, I found out that I had this thing in me. The anger was still there, and I could still dress you up and down, but there was this self-righteous stuff that came along for the ride. Now I'm not drunk, I'm sober, and I'm still dressing you up. And it was ugly. Oh my gosh, it was ugly. But I wanted to hang on to it. I kind of enjoyed the fact that I could rail sober. Weird. I didn't say it wasn't weird. I just said that, but that was one of the ones that I wanted. There was another one too. I didn't want to give up strip joints. I know. You just can't believe it. But I wasn't always old, and I. And I love strippers. But besides that, I'm going to tell you this real fast story. It will be, honestly. Don't call my wife. She's heard this story. It's an amazing thing. Somebody will say, "Your husband likes strippers." She knows that. She lived through it. The So there's this deal. I'm not ready to let go of the strip joints. I'm still going to go to the strip joints, okay? And I'm real kind of clandestine about it. I did. It was a caveat on my deal. I just said, you know, these are some things I'd like to hold back, God. You ain't fooling God. I may fool you. I may fool Clifford. I may fool my wife. But no, I never fooled my wife. Not once have I ever fooled her. But you know what I'm saying. The deal was is that I just, you don't fool God. And I understood the step. And I just said, okay, I'm not willing to give it up right now. But I'd like you to help me be willing. And I really meant it. I didn't really want to be there doing that kind of stuff. It was just a diversion and it was pleasant. Well, I delivered a job in Dallas one time and right after this happened. And I remember coming home and I'm like 2 hours ahead of time. What's a guy do with 2 hours to kill in Dallas before he has to be back out the shop? I drove right into the parking lot of a strip joint and I got out and I remember feeling not too good. Not on top of my game, and I walked in. I know a lot of these people anyway, and so I walk in and I got right to the door and opened the door. And when I opened the door, I walked in, took one step in, and all of a sudden I felt like my guts had drained out my rear end. I'm telling you guys, it was the weirdest feeling in the world. And I went, "Who?" And I closed the door. I walked back out and I'm holding onto the door, and I felt okay. And I went, "This, come on. This can't be happening to me." And I opened the door, and this girl standing right there, I've known her for a long time. She said, "Hey, Myers." And as soon as I walked in, the same feeling happened again. It was like I was empty. And I just went. And now I'm afraid to close the door. And so I'm standing there. It's colder than hell outside. And the how colder than hell? It's really cold, okay? And I'm standing there with the door open. And now these girls are getting upset. I'm freezing them to death in there. And this girl goes, "Are you coming in or going out?" And I'm going, "I don't know." And I finally just let go of the door and I backed out. It was sort of like, and as soon as I stood back out on the front porch, I was just fine again. And I went, "This is the weirdest thing that ever happened." It was like God was going, "Okay, listen, Slick, rock on, go in. I'll wait for you out here." And it was tangible. So I left, and then it wasn't a month later, I was back in town, same kind of scenario, a bunch of time to kill. I said, "Hey, I think I'll go over and see those folks," and I hadn't seen them in a long time like this. And I swung out of the car, put my feet on the parking lot, and the same feeling happened. All I had to do was stand in the parking lot. And I go, "Come on, this is not even fair, I don't even get to..." See what I'm saying? But that's how it worked. I hadn't been in one since. I take that back, I've been in one strip joint since then. That's been 16 years ago, and the only one I was in was I had a guy that I sponsored that was in a drunk in there one night, and I had to go get him. I did, honest, and I didn't look. Well, I looked a little bit, but it was. If there's something like this, guys, that we're trying to get rid of like this, God will help us be willing. There'll be a time when God will deal with it, and it may not be the time. This idea that He's going to remove everything right now is crazy. Sometimes it just takes a while, and sometimes it takes a while because He's got a reason for it. He's going to bang you up a little bit with it, teach you some things like humility and some things like, you know, being humble. There's all kinds of lessons that could be taught with our craziness and stuff. And then it says, when ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding." Amen. We've now completed step 7, the continuation of that third step prayer. Now guys, let's look at a couple of things real quick before we move on. A couple of things that you might skip. That are interesting. When we're looking for character defects, there are things that may not have turned up on your inventory that are still a defect, like pride. Well, pride didn't show up on my inventory, really. It wasn't something that was there, and so it kind of caught me off guard when somebody said, "Hey, what about pride? What about arrogance? What about, I mean, some of these other things that we bring into the deal?" Somebody said, "Well, I'm not prideful." Oh, really? Let me ask you a question. The last time that you were pulling into a gas station and somebody pulled into the pump ahead of you and cut you off, how did you react? Did you get goofy on him? Did you want to slay him, or were you okay? These are key marks. These are the things that tell us what our true heart is. It tells us what the condition of our insides are. And it's an amazing thing. The guys that, listen, I sponsor guys all the time, and one of the most reoccurring themes are these road rage deals. This guy cut me off in traffic this morning, and you know what? I chased him for 10 blocks, and I'm going, why? Why? Why aren't we dealing with the stuff that makes you feel like you own the road? Where is it that makes him less important than you? You see, I mean, these are the things that we're looking for. Subtle, yes, but these are the things that will still jack you up. These are things that still separate you from God and keep you out there crazoid, you see? So, this is how we begin to move over all of the things that we began to illuminate during this inventory. And these are the things that are profound in what they do to us in the big picture, that have nothing to do with booze. Remember now, we all know there's not anybody in here, man or woman, that doesn't know people in AA land that are crazy as bedbugs in AA without doing any steps. I've had no drink for 30 years. Oh yeah, you're the guy that was talking in there about that big yelling match you had at work with all your employees. Wasn't that you? See what I'm saying? We all know that's kind of the situations. Guys cheating, guys doing all kinds of crazy stuff. This center part on this step of 6 and 7 is where we get rid of all the other stuff. The stuff that keeps us balled up with all the areas of our life. This is crazy. If it was only the booze that did this, guys, how come your kids are still ducking when you walk in the room? That's a fair question. Guys that have kids, come on. This is a fair question. Sometimes we're holy terrors in sobriety because we're not dealing with the other stuff that needs to be dealt with. And these are the reasons why we sit there in the bed at night looking at the ceiling with our teeth gritted so hard that we're getting a toothache because of stuff that's bugging us. This is what we're trying to get rid of, guys. I'm telling you, AA was about this much about not drinking, and the rest of it was about how do we lay in that bunk at night and stare at the ceiling and say, thank you, God, for letting me be here. And we can relax, and we can listen to our wife breathing over there next to us, and we can just... You get this, right? You get this. This has got nothing to do. If you're sober today, I'm glad you're sober today. I'm glad you didn't have a drink today. But there is so much more to accomplish. And that's the fun stuff. That's the cool stuff. And then it says, surprise, surprise, now we need more action. I'm in the middle of 76. Without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We're going to make this pretty fast. I'm going to read this paragraph and then we're going to kind of skip through this stuff a little bit. We have a list of all persons we had harmed and who we are willing, there's that willing word again, to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out by our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live life on self-will and run the show ourselves. They didn't say one word about drunkenness. They didn't say one word about the squabbles. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. There it is again. Because I guarantee you guys, some of us get in here and we're still, even in sobriety, new sobriety, we're still pretty stiff-necked. We're still pretty bowed up about things. If this is the case, we're going to ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. Flip over to 77 at the top, and then we'll talk just a minute about this. At the moment, we were trying to put our lives in order. Yeah, we understand that. There's nobody that doesn't get that. But this is not an end in itself. Clifford used to beat me up with this stuff. I bet he's pulled me to this paragraph more times than any other paragraph in this book. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I'll let you in on the secret. For a long time, I didn't get this, guys. I simply didn't get it. What difference does it make? The reality is this. You can't be creating havoc in one area of your life and expect the other area of your life to be okay. Myers, I don't understand. Nobody's asking me to sponsor them. Oh, maybe it has something to do with the fact that you're going out every night, sports crew, and everything that'll slow down. Maybe that's it. You think? Yeah, I think. You see what I'm saying? You can't do that. It's like. I don't know why I'm not an effective sponsor. Maybe it has to do with $120,000 you owe the IRS. Maybe it has to do with 10 years of child support not being paid. Maybe it has to do with all those amends that you didn't make. Maybe it has to do with, you see what I'm saying? This is what we're trying to do, is get this thing so that we can be effective tools for God to use so that we can help other drunks. But you can't help other drunks if you're not dealing with this stuff. That's the reason why it was. Remember, Bob got drunk because what? Bob wanted to be sober. Bob got drunk because he wouldn't do this. He just got bowed up about it and said, I can't do that. Well, and I understand. And every one of you guys understand that too. There's none of us that don't understand how goofy this stuff is. What they manage to do is they spend, what, 4 or 5 pages talking about every area that we could possibly cover. Relationship stuff, divorce stuff, jail stuff, money stuff. They're just covering it all. I'm not going to take the time to go through it because we've got some other stuff that we need to cover. But you guys understand what the lowdown is. This idea, was there anybody in here that didn't sit in an AA meeting when they first walked in and you're looking at the lampshades and you're reading this thing, or maybe you picked up a book and you read it out of the book because you figured out where the page was that I didn't know was there, and you look at this thing and say, yes, I'll do that, yes, I'll do that, and you get down to 8 and 9 and you go, get out of here, it ain't happening. It ain't happening. Because most of us have made our lives so very small as a result of the drama in our life. I hack off the guy at the grocery store at the end of the street where I used to always buy groceries, and I can't go down there anymore. And then I pissed off 2 or 3 different cleaners because we always have a squabble going like this, and I can't go to any of those guys anymore. And pretty soon, it only takes a little while. And all of a sudden, I've got my world narrowed down to my kitchen and my garage. Not too good. Trust me. And it's just, hey, let's go there for dinner. No, can't go there for dinner. I already made a mess over there. And you see what I'm saying? This is the kind of stuff that we're trying to clear up. And they're giving us a great description of what it looks like to do this. Now, left on your own devices, is there anybody in here that could effectively do that? Maybe. I won't paint with too broad a brush there. My personal experience is that, guys, I made a mess out of every one that I did. I'm one of these guys that had to make amends twice. I made them once coming from ego and arrogance. I'm a little sunbeam for Jesus. I haven't had a drink in a couple of months, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to tell everybody I know that I'm sorry. And I did. I was running through them left and right. And the result was, about half the time they looked at me and their eyes glazed over and they wanted me out of there so fast it wasn't even funny. The other half, what they did was, they just drew me off sides. They just said, oh yeah, I remember. And then they start recounting the story. They start telling the story. And I'm going, yeah, don't you remember what you said? Don't you remember? And now, you see what I'm saying? It's wheels off. They drew me off sides and I'm already in fighting mode. I'm not in amends mode. I'm in kick-ass mode. And it ain't happening, because you look at me. It ain't happening. It's just like, in my mind, I'm tough. You ever watch guys built like me that walk sideways through doors? We used to have a guy that was our other club. This is about this perception thing I'm telling about like this. I guess he'd walk in like this, and he'd get right in the front of the door, and he'd turn sideways, and he'd walk in just like that. And we'd just sit back and look at him and go, what? Like this. I got to be real careful. Next time I walk in that door, I'm going to be straight on, buddy. You ain't going to see me turn. We build these images in our head, and it's just I'm supposed to be a Billy Badass, and I'm the biggest wuss in the world. I mean, ask my wife. It just, holy cow. So here's the deal. All of this stuff is about miracles. This is about God's grace at its absolute perfection. This idea that a busted up drunk could approach somebody that he's had years of heartache around and find himself able to walk free and clear of that with. I mean, there's nobody in here that works a program of recovery that doesn't know exactly what I'm talking about. The only guys that this all seems vague and nebulous to are people who've not done it. People who simply have made excuses why they can't do this stuff. This is where courage comes in. I got to tell you guys, at the end of the day, sometimes this stuff just takes courage. You just have to kind of just man up and grab one and walk in and just say what you got to say. I mean, it's just not. You girls are just screwed. You don't have one to grab. But it's just like, you know what I'm talking about. You just have to go do this stuff. The reality of this thing is that there's no area in this thing where there is a more dramatic and profound change in the way that we are. I don't think there's anybody in here that hasn't watched men and women that we've worked with go out and start the amends process, and then we see them a couple of days later when they walk around back out here in this courtyard smoking a cigarette. And I have a dozen times I've stood in here like this and just watched them out there through the window, and I'm going, is that the same guy? You're watching the way he stands, the way he handles himself, it's like you make an amends and all of a sudden your back's a little straighter and your shoulders are a little more thrown back like this. You make two or three of them and pretty soon you're floating in there like you own the joint. You see what I'm saying? It's an amazing deal. And every one of us would have said, it can't happen. There's no way I'm going to do it. And yet the process is what it is. Once you get in there and you see what happens, it's the coolest deal. I'm going to tell you a real fast story. There was this guy named James that I sponsored out at Homeward Bound. James was the quackest looking kid I ever saw in my whole life. He was littler than me, if you can imagine that. Littler, and had really, really bad acne, real long, greasy hair, and just kind of had weird eyes that didn't quite match up. It was like the gene pool he came from was probably about this deep. He's great. I love the kid. Been in jail, been in the federal penitentiary two or three times, and then he got out and got in trouble and got loaded. And anyway, he ended up at Homeward Bound, and he had two Aryan tattoos, one on each arm. I mean, I've seen lots of Aryan tattoos in my day, but never two on the same dude. I mean, it's like this guy, and he hates everybody. I don't care if you're black, if you're gay, he hated everybody. And I'm thinking, oh, man. And sure enough, he comes up and asks me to work with him. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'd rather work with a wasp nest than work with this cat. I just don't want to fool with him. So we get through this deal. We do his inventory. And I got to tell you guys, his inventory was about as ugly as anything I've ever seen. I mean, wasn't that old. But I'm telling you, man, the depth of the goofiness in his life was just crazy. And I'm getting kind of crazy thinking about how I'm going to get this guy through this thing. And I often forget that God's in the middle of it. I do. I'm thinking it's just me, you know. I'm going to get this guy sober. No, you're not. God's going to get this guy sober. And I'm just kind of there. And so I'm there for comic relief while he's sharing all this crap. And so he gets through this thing. We get to this amends process. He's got a great big old list of stuff on there like this. And he starts checking them off. He's one of these guys that's motivated. And the word willing was invented for James. I mean, he's just like every time you turn around, you go, James, what are you working on now? I'm working on this, this, and this. And next week I got this, this, and this. And then the following week I got this, this, and this. I mean, he's just real organized about how he's going to do it. I'll be out of Homeward Bound after that, and then you and I will have to work out what we're going to do with the rest of it. And I said, okay. Well, anyway, the last guy on his list that he's dealing with is his dad. Now, listen, his dad is a old West Texas farmer and who had brutalized this kid growing up. And he said, they used to talk about how bad his dad had brutalized him. And I said, I mean, how bad could it be? I mean, you know, we've all had rough dads at times, haven't we? And he goes, no, you don't understand. And James took his shirt off, and he looked like he'd been hit. There wasn't 2 inches on his body that didn't have a puncture mark in it. I said, what is that? And he goes, his dad used to whip him with a belt, with a great big old cowboy belt buckle on it like this, and beat him until he bled, and then he used to hold him into a bath of salt water until he passed out. And the kid would just float there like this, and he'd drag him out on the floor, and then he'd leave. And this would be repeated the whole time he was growing up. And James's body was just, man, looked like he'd been run through a dadgum food processor. And I'm thinking, how is he going to do this? And so we got all the meaty stuff done. We got all the hard things done except this one deal. So he said, I got to get this done before I get out of Homeward Bound. And I said, well, okay. And he said, I'm going to drive out to Lubbock or someplace, wherever it was. He was out in West Texas someplace. He said, I'm going to drive out there and see this guy. And I said, Jake, let me go with you. And he goes, no, it's okay. I'll just do this by myself. I said, James, let me go with you. And he goes, no, I got it. Well, he calls me a couple of days later. I said, James, where are you? And he said, I'm on my way to Lubbock. And I said, dang, I thought I'd gonna talk you out of that. And he goes, no, I'm okay. I'm fine. So I said, I'll tell you what you do. When you get out there, you call me, and we're going to get all prayed up before you go in there. And then you go do what you got to do, and then I want to talk to you as soon as you get done. And he said, okay. So he called me. He said, I'm right down the street from where this guy lives. And I said, okay. And so we prayed on the telephone. And I said, you okay? And he said, yeah, I'll be all right. And then he didn't call back. And I'm thinking, oh, this got ugly. And so about 10 hours later, he calls back. And I said, buddy, this, you're not following the deal. We had a deal, right? You were going to call me, right? He said, I know. He said, it was just a pretty emotional deal. I said, well, tell me what happened. He said, well, he said, it was the weirdest deal. He said, I walked up, knocked on the door, and this old guy answered the door. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, my dad answered the door, but he was old. And I said, but he's always been older than you. And he said, but I know, but he just looked so old. He was just all crippled up and kind of bent over like this. And he just, I looked at him and I just realized that it was just, and so we talked a little bit and there was some kindness between the two of us. And we shared a little bit of this kind of stuff like this. And then there's like dead quiet on the telephone. And I said, James, are you okay? And he said, yeah. And he said, I'm not telling you the whole story. And I said, please do. And he goes, I actually had a gun in my waist, and I was actually going to go kill him. And I went, James, man, so much for following the plan. And he said, well, I did follow the plan. I did exactly what you said, and here's what the plan was, is that if I went up there and I did what you said do, and it didn't work, I was going to kill him. And I went, okay. No more trips without me, okay, brother? And he said, okay. And so I said, he said, look, I'm not gonna play games with you. He said, I don't have him penciled in on my Christmas card list, and we're not best buddies, but we're okay. I understood where he's coming from, and I understand what's a little bit more, a little bit better anyway, about what he was going through and what happened, and we're okay. Okay, that's not the good part of the story. The good part of the story is that the following week he coins out of Homeward Bound. And their coin out things in the old days used to be pretty special. I mean, the place used to be just packed, and he'd been there 90 days, and so I mean, he knew all these guys real well like that. And so here he is. I'm up there on his coin out deal, and there's James is right here, and there's a big black guy right here, and then we go around the room, and there's a couple of guys over here like this, and we're doing the Lord's Prayer, and I feel something, and I look over like this, and James is just weeping like a kid. I'm just weeping as hard as he can, and I look over there, and this black guy that's standing right next to him has got his arm around James's neck, and they're hugging each other, and a couple of these other guys break rank and walk over there, and pretty soon there's like 10 guys hugging this guy. And every color in the universe hugging this guy. And I'm thinking, there's this Billy Badass Aryan Nation guy being loved on by these big old black guys. And I'm telling you right now, it was the coolest thing in the whole wide world. And I'm just standing here looking like this. And I guess you cannot make that stuff up. And you can't make it happen if you wanted to. If somebody had said, hey, look, you're going to have to learn to love your brother. Super. You're going to have to learn not to pee in the front yard. I mean, you might as well have been saying that. I mean, it just... You understand you can't get from point A to point B like that. There has to be. I mean, look, we take for granted the booze thing like this, but we always seem to completely, totally forget, how do we get rid of hate? How do we get rid of bigotry? How do we get rid of all kinds of goofy prejudice that follows us into this deal, that we bring into these rooms with us? How do you get rid of that? You submit to the process. You do exactly what they ask us to do, when they ask us to do it, the way they ask us to do it, and the miracle of reconciliation helps, happens, and this thing gets sweet. It gets sweet. We got no room for hate in these rooms, and we got no room for bigotry in these rooms, and we got no room for any of that crap in these rooms. And the way to get clear of it is just like that. This is the coolest stuff in the world. Flip over to... We're going to actually do it. Step 10, 84. And let's look at this real quick. In the middle of this thing, in the middle of page 84, it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. This is pretty well thought out stuff. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. This is the only place in the big book where it gives us permission to work steps out of order. We used to have a guy that used to come over here that was kind of a guru in AA, and he used to get really, really steadfast in his belief that you had to have every one of your amends done before you could do 10, 11, and 12. Every one of them. Well, I mean, I got guys that screw people over in Europe, and it's going to be a while before this guy who just got out of jail has got money to go to Europe. I mean, it's going to take some time. So you're telling me that he can't do 10, 11, and 12, which seals his solidarity with God and with the rest of this deal. He can't do that? Well, that's ludicrous. And there it is. It just told us that we will continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. As we do in this, we're going to do this. This is the reason why we start 10, 11, and 12 the moment we start this amends process. We'll be living like that. And it's because, listen, guys, otherwise what will happen is if you're not paying attention in 10, what will happen is you'll start drifting backwards again. Remember, we talked about this stuff last week. My head always sold me the idea that once I got close enough to God, I could just stop paddling. I could just drop the oar and I just start drifting towards God. It's like a big tractor beam and he's got me. He's going like this. It's not the way it works. The moment I stop paddling, I start drifting backwards. That's the nature of man. I'm always going to be drifting away from God. It takes effort to stay up close to Him. And that's the reason why this stuff is so important. You all get that, okay? We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. And the guys that practice this for a lifetime, I mean, listen, I won't embarrass Dara by telling the story, but I can remember when I first got here and Dara was here. Dara had just started here when I got here. She'd been here maybe a half a year when I got here. But you wouldn't recognize her, guys. You wouldn't even recognize her. She was a floozy. No, I wouldn't. She wasn't. The point is that the folks that you see in these rooms that stay and continue to do this work change. It's an amazing kind of thing. I mean, I was the floozy. I remember the story now. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Where do those sound familiar from? Back on your inventory, right? That's exactly where it sounded from. And then when these crop up, look, they're going to ask us to do four things. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. That's one. We discuss them with someone immediately. That's two. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. That's three. And then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. That's four. They give us four concrete things. Well, I just don't know what to do, Myers. Read. Do what it said do. And then after a while, it becomes second nature, and then you just know. And in my office, it looked just like this. I go, you're a stinking... And I hang up the phone. And then I just don't let go of the phone. This is how I know what to do. I just don't let go of the phone. I just hold it. And I hold it until I cool off for just a second. And then I hit speed dial Cliff's on it like this, and I go, Clifford, I just had a little verbal abuse with a guy, and he goes, well, have you prayed about it? I said, doing it right now. And he said, okay, then go call the guy back, right? And I said, yep, I know what to do. And I hang up the telephone. I said, and let it go. And I'm sitting there like this, and while I'm praying, Londa walks in. Every time she walks in, we share an office, but usually she's out of here by now because she hates to see me yell on the telephone. And so she walks in, and she goes, you pissed somebody else off, did you? And I went, yeah. And I'm just holding it. And when I finally cool off, say my prayer, and then I pick up a telephone like this, and I go, tink. Okay, don't hang up. Don't listen. Really, don't hang up. Listen, I treated you shabbily. You didn't deserve any of that. I got way too many irons in the fire, and it all came out sideways, and you got the brunt of it. Please, please forgive me. And like that. And that's how you deal with it. And they say, groovy. And, oh, okay, can you come see me next week for an order? Yeah, okay, we'll do that. You see, it's like that. We're clearing this stuff up because I don't want this stuff to fester. I don't want to find out that I can't go to TI anymore and sell our stuff that we sell. I don't want to because I've made somebody mad there. I want to fix this stuff. But it's the same way with anybody. I don't want mad people in church. I don't want mad people here. I don't want mad people. I mean, how many times have you had a dispute with somebody in AA and then you can't go to that meeting anymore? We see it all the time. I can't even go to that group anymore. I've pissed off so many people over there like that. This is where 10-step work would be. This is how we deal with this stuff. We resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I love this. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by now, sanity will have returned. Guys, sanity is what this whole thing is. Remember in the lead off of this thing where they talk about the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind, not in his body? Sanity is what it takes. I've been strangely insane around the first drink. I've been strangely insane around a whole lot of this stuff. And once we get into the situation, we get to this particular point, then all of a sudden we find out. Any of you guys remember the day and the moment that you finally discovered and realized that you didn't have to drink anymore? That the obsession to drink and drug, the craziness that leads into this thing was gone? It's just the coolest thing in the world to go, hey, wait a minute. It's been weeks since I thought about a drink. You see? From a guy who couldn't go 2 minutes without thinking about a drink when I first got here, to be able to, and I'll never forget, it was the most profound moment I'd ever had. It was just like an amazing, I'm walking around going, huh, this is the coolest. I'm not even thinking about it anymore. You know, and then I test it. I go out to the Dope House and I go out to the Centennial and sit in the parking lot. See, it didn't. You could do that too. Don't do that. Don't. Bunch of sober guys walking up and down in front of Centennial like this. No, don't do that. Okay, like this. Listen, I tell you what, because I don't really want to get into the rest of this stuff. There's some. We'll cover one thing on 85 and then we'll stop for the evening. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve Thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line as much as we wish. It's the proper use of the will. Guys, there are, three musts on that page, two of them in that one paragraph. For folks who think that AA is subjective and that we can set this stuff up any way we want to, that there are no musts in AA, that there are no directions that bind us and hold us in, I'm telling you right now, here's a whole page full of that kind of stuff. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to these links, I promise you, there are going to be things that you must do. You must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. And these are thoughts that must go with us constantly. They must. And listen, if you're not doing that, check it. Find out why. There's a tangible manifestation of why it is that it's not real in your life. If you're drifting sideways, there's a reason you're drifting sideways, and these are the things that we want to shore up and look at. The fix is easy, guys. I promise you right now, the fix is, most of the fixes can be done in a conversation, in one conversation. We'll illuminate it, look at it, and see what it is, and then you can get right back on track and you'll be okay. The trick is that most of us have stopped asking. We've stopped looking at our lives. We just assume because we hadn't had a drink for 20 years that we're okay. Wrong. You're not. Just call me, I'll tell you, honest. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Myers. This is great.